Is to be submitted today on oral argument, and we begin with United States versus Ocampo Vergara. Ms. Schumacher? Excuse me.
Schumacher, Your Honor. Thank you.
Schumacher, I'm sorry. I did mispronounce that. My apologies.
I didn't
read carefully enough.
That's all right. It's very common. I represent Ricardo Ortiz Fernandez, who's also referred to in the record as Alex, and we had just raised an issue regarding the admission of two summary charts. Those were government's exhibit 160,
Are those in the record?
If it should have been sent up with the electronic record.
We don't have them.
They don't?
I don't have them.
I can check with the clerk's office, the district clerk's office. I know we, I have copies of them, but the one is 160 is a chart with their faces and phone numbers on it. And
do you have extra copies?
I don't. I just have these two,
okay.
But I can provide them.
I think that, with the permission of the presiding judge, it would be helpful to me
to
have them. But
yeah. Well, it should have been
Judge
sent up
Smith.
As part of the official record on appeal, so I don't know why.
But they are part of the official
record.
Yes,
they're part of the record on the official record.
Okay.
But anyways, the one chart has the 160 has their pictures on it, and then it has phone numbers underneath there, and dates and times of calls, I think. And this other one just has the names of the people across and down the side, and then it has dots where they're supposedly had communications by phone.
Judge Smith were inclined, I would actually like to see them. You're holding them up.
Would you like me to just bring them up and show them to you?
That's fine.
If Judge Smith
consents,
you can hand them to the law clerk. He'll pass them to us.
Well, I'm sorry they didn't send them up. Mostly what I have to say is pretty well in the briefs. I want to just add a couple of comments. The government talks about the fact that we didn't support a conclusory statement.
Can I just ask you on Exhibit 160, is this intended to portray the government's version of the conspiracy?
Yes.
Kind of how the company, if you will, the drug running company, as the government sees
that's
it,
my understanding. That's my understanding.
Like
yes.
An org chart?
Mm-hmm. I was not the trial attorney in this case. I was just appointed for appeal, but that, from the record, that's my understanding of what that was supposed to do. So anyways, let me to get back to it. I just have a couple, 3 points I wanted to just say. There was an argument in the government's brief that we made some conclusory statements. I disagree with that in the reply brief, but I would like to add that it's really sort of hard to prove a negative if you're saying, you know, something's not in the record. The connecting the phone numbers to the phone to the person is not in the record. The only way I can prove that is say you have to look at the whole record. I can't point to a particular page in the record and say it's not on that page, because if it's anywhere in the record, obviously that's fine. I looked, I didn't find it anywhere. If the government has pages that it can cite to specifically, I haven't seen it. And so, you know, it's always the government's burden to show the admissibility of its evidence. So I would say that really is not an issue. The other thing I would like to talk to is about the government's exhibit 162, and that's the one that you have there with the dots on it.
And we're gonna we'll give you an extra minute because you were interrupted by the problem with the exhibit.
Well, I appreciate that, thank you. The one with the dots on it, the government's response to our objection on that was that each person, the conversation between each of those people was discussed in other testimony. And then they cite to places in the record where they say that occurs. The problem with that is there's just 6 out of the 10 people that my client is supposedly have talked to, did they cite to in the record where that was discussed. There's obviously 4 more of those, Gustavo Ortiz Salazar, Daniel Castrojohn, Noemi Vargas, and Diana Campos Uribe. Those 4, there was no citation in the government's brief to where in the record there was any evidence that those people had those conversations. Also, they didn't cite to anywhere. Obviously, that chart has more than 70 dots on it. And so if you figure that's the way the chart's set up, that's at least 35 phone calls. They didn't cite to the rest of it. So the objection at trial was that there, even if there's some of it in there, not all of it is in there. That's exact objection that was raised by the trial trial attorney. Our record page number for that is in the 41286 record is page 2427. And so it's not all there. It's not all in the testimony. And so even the government concedes that those charts have to accurately reflect what the testimony says, and they don't. They go beyond it. The last thing I want to address is the harmless error analysis. The government says it's harmless because the evidence was introduced during the testimony or the case in chief of one of the co-defendants. I submit to you that the jury would not have made any kind of such distinction, that it was only applicable to one. Also, the evidence was used against my client. I mean, obviously his name is on those charts and the dots are there and the links are there between the client, between the defendants. And so as far as that's concerned, I don't think it makes it harmless. The second point is that I think more important is that they say that it's harmless because of the overwhelming evidence. And there's a couple cases out there that are kind of interesting. But the strength of the
evidence
against
you. Give you 30 seconds to say whatever you
I'm sorry.
Want to, because you don't have any rebuttal time. So,
I'm sorry?
You don't have any rebuttal time, so go ahead and say what you need to say in 30 seconds.
Okay. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I cited one case, Regan versus Time, Inc. It's a Supreme Court case. It talks about a picture being worth 1,000 words. And to paraphrase, the footnote that was in that case related to that, symbolism is a primitive but effective way of communicating ideas. The charts in this case symbolize a conspiracy and is a shortcut form of mind to mind. And when you do that, those charts are so important to the jury that they basically go into the jury room with them and overwhelm the rest of the evidence. So I appreciate a reversal. Thank you very much for the extra time.
Thank you, Ms. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll let you pronounce your name because I'm gonna mess it up.
Thank you,
I've already messed up Ms. Schmucker's name, so.
It's Joe Padian.
Padian,
yes,
all right.
And I am here for on behalf of appellant Salvador Ocampo Vergara. The issue we have raised is the sufficiency of the evidence issue. Our contention is that the jury based a decision which was not rational on stacking of inferences and guilt by association.
Now, as I understand it, you did not move for acquittal at the end of the evidence, so we just looked to see whether there was any evidence. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. There was a motion for acquittal that was joined by the appellant's trial counsel, and as such, we would because it's a de novo proceeding, we would ask that we be allowed to proceed, that the court review the evidence under the Rule 29 motion for acquittal, which I believe was joined by appellant's trial counsel joined in another counsel in making that motion.
All right, we'll just go ahead and discuss the evidence and we'll
yes,
decide
sure.
about the standard.
The government presented 11 witnesses to prove this case. Four witnesses had never met or come into contact with the appellant, Salvador Ocampo Vergara. Those witnesses, Jose Figueroa, never saw the appellant, never met the appellant. Alejandro Gonzalez, who was constantly going back and forth from the United States to Mexico in order to conduct the drug trafficking, never met or saw the appellant in this case. Santiago Lagunas, also involved in this case, also conducting the trafficking of the drugs, never met or saw, didn't know the appellant in this case, Salvador Ocampo Vergara, nor did Luis Palacios, who the government also presented. So the first four witnesses mentioned to this court did not know or had never met or seen Salvador Ocampo Vergara. There were four witnesses who presented direct evidence that there was a participation in the conspiracy by Salvador Ocampo Vergara. However, Your Honor, the testimony of those witnesses was so diminished by the cross-examination and presentation of previous misstatements to the court, misstatements to agents, The fact that each of them was gaining such an advantage by testifying in the case against Salvador Ocampo Vergara, the fact that the inferences made when each of those statements that those witnesses made connected Salvador Ocampo Vergara to the crime, they were made solely for the purpose of reducing their own sentences. There were two witnesses that the government presented who did know Salvador Ocampo Vergara, but those witnesses could not connect Salvador Ocampo Vergara, and that was Daniel Castrejon and Maricel Valdez. Neither of those witnesses could connect Salvador Ocampo Vergara to the conspiracy through any direct evidence. Even the agent, Agent Clow, stated that Salvador Ocampo Vergara was never caught with contraband. There was no border crossings or any records of border crossings for Salvador Ocampo Vergara. There was no direct communication ever recorded, even though they had wiretaps and phone records for every other co-defendant. There was no record of Salvador Ocampo Vergara making any statements to any of those other co-defendants or the witnesses that the government brought participating in the conspiracy. The government has the burden to present to the jury a case which will allow the jury to make a rational decision based on that evidence. The decision the jury made in this case, that Salvador Ocampo Vergara was guilty of conspiracy, that is, that he had an agreement, he had knowledge of the agreement, and he participated in that agreement.
Isn't there testimony that Gonzalez, Adriana, Angelica, and Valdez testified that Ocampo Vergara recruited them to be couriers and that he expressly informed them that they would be transporting drugs? Isn't that in the record? And didn't they testify to that?
They did, Your Honor. They did testify to that. And
so how can you say there's no testimony in the record that he was involved with?
Your Honor, I submit that there's no credible testimony in the record, and I know that the court defers to the jury to make determinations of credibility. However, that determination that jury made has to be rational. And I submit to the court that was not a rational determination based on the record. And I believe my time's up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Perry.
Thank you.
Mr. Smythe.
May it please the court, good morning. My name's Peter Smythe. I represent Gustavo Ortiz Salazar. And on appeal, we brought up two issues. The first one being that the trial court erred in admitting the opinion testimony of Richard Klo when he said that my client was a drug courier. The second one being the admission of guilt by association evidence that the government presented in the trial court was plain error. Going back to the first issue, the government asked Richard Klo point blank, based upon your investigation and the travel patterns of Ortiz Salazar, what did you determine? And he answered, we, speaking for the agency that he was working for, we determined that he was believed to be a courier.
Okay, but at the beginning of his testimony, he was proffered as an expert, and the court said any objection, and everybody said no objection. What was he an expert on?
As I understand it, he was an expert on drug organizations.
Okay, and isn't that the context in which he used the term courier? It wasn't, you know, in law school, I remember these cases about the drug courier profile where they would just stop you at the airport because you were wearing, you know, a funny hat or something like that, and that was the drug courier profile, or you were on a one-way ticket. That's not the context in which this was said. He's kind of doing the org chart we talked about earlier, and where does your client fit in that? Isn't that the context which would be consistent with what he was proffered for as an expert and that nobody objected to?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, because as an expert, he can testify as to the unique business model of drug trafficking organizations, a business model. But I don't believe he can cross the line and start naming names and naming people as he's this in this particular organization, she is this in this particular organization.
But he's not profiling him to get there. He's kind of saying the role he played, he was a driver, which would make him a courier in this organization that I'm, Agent Klo, am an expert on. this is how these organizations work. There's the top dog, there's the middle guy, there's whatever, and they have all their names. And this is where he fell in that. I mean, I agree it would have been better not to approach it that way, but is it really the same thing as the drug courier profile of, well, if a guy buys a one-way ticket and wears a funny hat and has a mustache, then he's a drug courier?
Well, I think his testimony is based upon drug profiling. I mean, the question itself is, based upon your investigation, well, what does that investigation entail? It entails some drug profiling. I mean, here, Richard Clough is the very first witness in the case. So he is almost like a super witness. He is testifying as to his personal observations. He's testifying as a summary witness of the entire investigation. And he's also testifying as an expert. And here, it's all summed up by the government. Based upon your investigation, that's not only what you have seen, but it's also what your agents have seen.
Experts can do that. They can rely on evidence that they didn't personally experience. And so if there is evidence that your client was, in fact, a driver of drugs, that's what a courier is, isn't it? It's not saying, well, he's got a mustache, so he must be, or he's, you know, standing there in a funny way, or he's in the corner, you know, all those things that were in those drug courier profile cases. This just doesn't hit me the same way. I'm not saying you don't ultimately prevail on your point. I'm just saying it seems different.
Well, when you go back to the question, based upon your investigation, this is the government's question, based upon your investigation, what is that investigation if it doesn't include drug profiling? I mean, there is no in-court testimony that he's relying on. He is testifying as a summary witness, and he's using that summary information he has, the opinions of other agents and whatever they gathered, and said point blank, Smythe's client is a drug courier. He puts him right into the conspiracy. And I believe under this court's precedent, he can't do that. He can't say that we believe that this person is a member of a drug trafficking organization. The expert can describe drug trafficking organizations and how they work, but I don't believe that this court has said that a federal agent can sit down and say, sit in on the stand and say, well, based upon our investigation, which may or may not include profiling and other out-of-court statements and documents and evidence, I believe that he is a drug courier. When he says that he is a drug courier, he puts him square into a drug trafficking organization.
So as you said at the beginning, your objection is only to the fact that he named names, not that he described information that would be parallel to the facts and evidence that the jury could identify with your client.
Yes, Your Honor. At the very beginning of his testimony, he described drug trafficking organizations and how they worked, and I believe that was proper under the rules. But then the government delved into this specific organization where you have this agent calling people cell heads, distributors, couriers, and it's all based upon this opinion testimony.
Yeah. All right.
I believe that's all the time I have.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Smythe, and you've saved time for rebuttal.
Yes.
Ms. Hagan?
Good morning, Your Honors. Terry Hagan for the United States.
Let's begin with this last point about the drug courier profile while it's on everyone's mind. It does seem to me that it may have extended past what our case law requires when ultimately it's sort of an ultimate jury question to identify the specific defendant as a courier.
Okay. Judge Smith, I think when you review the record, Special Agent Clough's testimony in particular, what you're going to find is that Agent Clough described drug courier travel patterns and that drug trafficking organizations frequently use different drug couriers. But he never offered an opinion about what was in defendant Ortiz Salazar's mind.
But he did, in fact, though, say that he, in his opinion, he was a drug courier. Is that?
But that sounds.
Is that right?
No, that's not right. Okay. What he said was, in his opinion, Ortiz Salazar could possibly be a drug courier based on what he saw. See, the difference is in Gonzalez-Rodriguez, which is a case I cite extensively in our brief, it basically says that when an agent says a defendant's conduct matches the profile of a drug courier, thus the defendant must have known he was carrying drugs, that's impermissible. But that's not what happened.
If the line is crossed, not when he calls him a courier, but when he then makes the conclusion that he knew he was a courier?
Yes.
Because the actual question was, now, based on your investigation, the travel patterns of Ortiz Salazar, what did you determine? Answer, we determined that he was believed to be a courier for the drug trafficking organization that we were targeting. So that's the language we're dealing with. That's
right. And so what his point was, and I think what in context his point was, because we believed him to possibly be a drug courier, and that was based on his travel to O'Hare Airport with Araceli Gonzalez, we needed to investigate further. And how did they do that? They put the TCS lookout on him. So you're saying
he could have been an unwitting sort of victim of Araceli. You know, he's going along and she says, hey, could you carry my suitcase for me? And the suitcase is full of drugs, but he doesn't have any idea. He's just being a gentleman and all that. And you're saying, just saying he's a courier and that he physically transports stuff doesn't make him intentionally such.
Right.
That seems like a very fine distinction in a jury, what he's been calling people cell heads and couriers and whatever for several pages.
Well, it is a fine distinction, but calling the witnesses couriers who testified that they were couriers doesn't really add anything to it. And you'll remember,
what's weird to me is that the lawyers were all over any time he tried to get into hearsay and whatever. There was plenty of objecting. It wasn't like the lawyers were asleep, but they didn't object to any of this mention of couriers, cell heads, or whatever. And obviously plays into the standard of review, but tell us how that transpires here.
Well, in our case,
they did object once to somebody else, but not to to most of it.
Right. And you'll have to remember that when Ortiz Salazar was separated from Gonzalez at O'Hare Airport, he said he wasn't even traveling with her. He didn't even know her. So, as the prosecutor explained in closing argument, that is consciousness of guilt evidence. Ortiz Salazar was found guilty because the evidence showed his knowing involuntary participation in the drug trafficking conspiracy. The agent's testimony did not cross what this court has said is a fine but critical line between expert testimony regarding methods of operation unique to the drug business and testimony about the defendant's intent.
Yes, sure. Take your time, that's all right.
Thank you. And the case that I cited in the 28J letter that I filed Monday, in that case, the agent listed several things about drug courier profile. This is what they do. One of those things was testimony about how drug couriers and the timing, how they went from Mexico to the United States and then back to Mexico. And the court found that the agent's testimony was merely an explanation of the facts in that case. The agent there, like in our case, Special Agent Clow, made no assertion or generalization regarding the defendant's intent, and therefore it wasn't even the functional equivalent of an opinion that the defendant knew he was carrying drugs. So I think the agent was very careful when he testified that he did not cross the line that the court has said exists. It was
Maybe we should move to some of the other points. I got you started off on that, and that you've responded to the question.
I'd like to
the question.
You, Judge Smith, go to the argument about the summary charts. And for the court's convenience, I have some additional copies. And I know one of those charts, Exhibit 160, is really hard to read because it's so small. So may I tender these to the bench so you can see them better?
Yeah, you can give those to the bailiff. Thank you.
The parties agree that the proper standard for evaluating whether the district court erred in admitting those two charts is abuse of discretion. This court has said that a trial court abuses its discretion when admitting evidence based on an erroneous view of the law or a clearly erroneous assessment of the evidence. The crux of the argument by opposing counsel, if I could lift from her brief, is that the charts stamped anonymous phone records with a name, and that was something that the court did find in Zavala, but we don't have that here. And the reason that we don't have it, and the reason that there is no error in this case, is because Agent Clow testified that the charts were supported by evidence that was already before the jury. Specifically, those exhibits were 143 to 159. So I want to look at what those exhibits would have been. Rather than going to the exhibits themselves, if you want to look at the exhibit list, what you will find is that government's exhibits 143 to 148 and 159 are phone toll informations. Now those will show the phone number. It won't show the subscriber name. That's because we're dealing with drug dealers. They don't put phones in their names usually. If you look though at government's 150 through 158, those are a huge amount of records. That's why they qualified under 1006 as voluminous records. Those are the phone dimes, the phone downloads from every phone that was collected from co-conspirators in this case. Those phones had a phone contact list. And so in those phone contact lists, the numbers were attributed to different people. So that's how the evidence did support attributing phone numbers to the people in question. On top of that, you need to think back to what Ancient Cloud testified in the very beginning of the trial, which was after Palacios was arrested in San Antonio, the DEA put every phone number that was in Palacios' phone directory into a database and checked it against phone numbers being investigated by DEA all over the country. When they did that, they found one phone number hit in Chicago. That's what brought Ortiz Fernandez into this investigation, because according to Agent Clown's testimony, they then contacted the DEA in Chicago. Chicago sent a photograph of the person using that phone number and the phone number, and that was Ortiz Fernandez. And if you look back at the exhibit list again, that's Government Exhibit 149. That's the PIN register information from Ortiz Fernandez's phones. So I think what you will find is that Agent Clowes was right. All of the evidence supporting the entries on those charts were contained in those records. But it is appellant's burden to show that there was error, and the appellant has not done that. What the appellant has done, and the reason I called her argument conclusory, is because appellant merely relies on Mr. Effington's assertion in cross-examination and in arguing to keep the charts out that those records, or how did he put it, that the phone records were not attributable, the toll records were not attributable to any particular person. That's just an assertion with no proof behind it. This voluminous evidence is what supported it. And in addition to that, as further cooperation that the charts were accurate, you had Angelica, and I forget, Angelica Velasco Campos, who testified that her phone had the phone numbers for all three defendants. She also had phone numbers for witnesses Castor John, for another co-conspirator, Diana Campos, who did not testify, for Adriana, and for Chula. Her phone download is Government Exhibit 154, so that's in evidence. Araceli Gonzalez testified that she called Ocampo Vergara when she crossed the border to tell him that she had made it. And her records, the phone dumps from her phone, are Government's Exhibit 150 and 151. Another example would be Adriana Diaz Ocampo, who testified that she had phone numbers for LaChula and Salvador Ocampo. And I believe that she said she also had Ortiz Fernandez's. And her phone records were downloaded in Government's Exhibit 153. And yet another example is Marisol Valdez, who had Ocampo Vergara's phone number. She said she called him when she crossed the border. So that phone number would have been in her phone dump. and that's Government's Exhibit 152. So I submit to you, Your Honor, that there is no error in this case. The district court.
Would you address the question that was asked earlier about whether there was a sufficient motion for acquittal, for judgment of acquittal at the close of the evidence by all of the defendants?
That two of the three appellants made Rule 29 motions.
It, particularly the question refers to Mr. Ocampo Vergara.
Yes, sir.
If you don't know, let's not spend any time on it.
Okay.
If you,
talk
to us about guilt by association evidence.
Okay. The trial court here did not err by allowing guilt by association because the government was not arguing that any defendant, and in particular Mr. Ortiz Salazar, was guilty because of the people that they associated with. The district court can protect defendants from guilt by association, but it does not need to protect co-conspirators from evidence of their confederates' actions that they take in furtherance of their common illegal aims. And that's
your point, as I understand it, is that a conspiracy is by definition association with other wrongdoers. Is that?
That's correct, John. That's correct.
But not mere association.
If I happen
to drive in a car with someone who is a member of the conspiracy, that doesn't automatically make me a member of the conspiracy.
Exactly, Judge Haynes. And if you look to Alejandro Rodriguez's testimony, yes, Ortiz Salazar rode in the car and drove in the car with Alejandro when he knew that they were carrying drugs. But
that's the critical piece.
Right.
Yeah.
And Rodriguez testified that he told him, "I'm carrying drugs." And Ortiz said, "That doesn't matter. And I'm tired of making little money. Introduce me to some of the people you work with." And then when they got to Chicago with the drugs, Rodriguez paid Ortiz $2,000 for driving the car that had drugs in it for a couple hours. So there really is not a question of that type of evidence being introduced for, you know, mere presence or mere guilt by association.
All right, thank you, Ms. Hagan.
Okay, and Your Honor, we rely on the rest of our brief, and I would just like to point out that in this 8-day trial,
your time has expired, Ms. Hagan. Thank you.
Yes.
All right, Mr. Smythe, you've saved time for rebuttal.
Thank you. There are just a couple things I'd like to address. One, regarding Agent Clow, I mispronounced his name, it's Clow. The government says that he gave his opinion, quote, based on what he saw. I don't believe that's what his quote is. His quote is, "We determined he was believed to be a courier," meaning the DEA, the whole agency, that's what his.
But how do you explain, I mean, there's plenty of objecting, the lawyers are engaged and involved and they're not, you know, asleep. if this is so awful, why wasn't it objected to?
It was objected to late, in a way, because the same question was asked about some other members.
Some other one. But by that time, we'd had the statement you're concerned about, as well as all the cell heads and couriers and whatever that you're complaining about. So I don't think that preserved the error, let's put it that way. And I don't think that changes your standard of review on the particulars.
Right. But to answer your question, Judge Haynes, I think, like I said, this Agent Cloud becomes somewhat of a super witness where he can testify as to his personal observations, summary of, and also expert opinion. So it makes it very hard for the trial lawyers to figure out what is objectionable and what is not. For instance, in this...
Yeah, but you're saying the mere use of the word courier is enough, because if you need more than that, you don't have it. What you have is the phrase, you know, the back and forth that we've read and talked about, and you say that's enough without more, and therefore that should be enough without more to object to.
I agree. I agree with that, and that's why we're proceeding on plain error review. I believe that the trial lawyer should have objected at that time and reined that in. In fact, I believe this court has talked about trial courts reining in this type of testimony by agents. I believe that Agent Cloud crossed the line when he identified my client as a drug courier, because that is not testifying as to a business model and allowing the jury to determine what my client might have been in that business model, but he testifies, we determined that he is a courier for the drug trafficking organization. It wasn't based upon just his personal opinion. The trial, the defense lawyers did what they could, damage control, but he again said, no, we believe, meaning the agency. And what that did for this trial is that framed the rest of the evidence. I mean, the jury's gonna see my client as a drug courier and all the rest of the people lining up with Richard Clow's identification of everybody in this organization. In dealing with the government's Rule 28J letter, there the agent made no assertion or generalization regarding the defendant's intent. And I think it goes back to the business model. This court has allowed agents to talk about drug trafficking organizations' business model, but here it went even deeper, where you have Agent Clow identifying people in doing things for a particular drug trafficking organization. So how do you get out of that? Said, well, he has identified this person as a cell head. Well, that person, he's talking about that person's requisite mental state. And then he goes to my client and says he's a drug courier. That speaks volumes, and it speaks volumes to a jury who's deciding whether or not a person is in or a person is out. When it comes to guilt by association, the government contends here that it did not contend at trial that Mr. Ortiz was guilty because of the people he associated with. But just in closing, the government argued, what inference can you draw from his associating with all these individuals? And what the government emphasized repeatedly in the case are third-party arrests. The arrest of certain couriers, certain people involved in this organization said, this person was arrested, this person was arrested, this person was arrested, which none of that is admissible to show guilt. But then it turns over to Ortiz Salazar and says, he's associating with all these people. That is guilt by association evidence, and it's damaging, and it's highly prejudicial. We're not arguing that there was no evidence presented against Ortiz Salazar about his involvement in a drug organization, but the guilt by association evidence was so prejudicial to him that it just overwhelmed the rest of the evidence. So we ask for a new trial.
All right, thank you, Mr. Smythe. Your case is under submission. Let me just ask both sides to cooperate as officers of the court and provide to Ms. Trice here, our courtroom deputy, at least one copy of those charts. You can make sure they're accurate, but provide that to her. she can make additional copies for the judges, or if you have multiple copies, that would be fine too. But just ask that you would visit with her about that and provide those. Is that? All right, we still have those here. All right, so
is that acceptable? I mean, would those be acceptable to satisfy what Judge Smith mentioned?
Let's just make sure while all counsel is here, while we're hearing the next case, that all of you confer and figure out that this is done appropriately and that everyone's in agreement about it, so the judges will have those. What we're interested in right now are
160.
Hard copies of these particular charts that were shown. That would be helpful if everyone's in agreement, unless there's objection made to that. Yeah. All right, okay. Thank you. And we also wish to acknowledge Ms. Schmucker and Mr. Smythe that you are court appointed, and we appreciate your willingness to take the appointments and appreciate your good work on behalf of your clients. Your case is under submission.